This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Sharitz Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. It is Friday, Junior, and by which I mean Thursday, the 4th of July. And we are this much closer to the weekend. But how are you doing so far today, guys?
Not too bad, Lynn. Just looking forward for tomorrow. It'll be a very restful weekend. I anticipate that.
Oh, yeah, because Raya is over, right? So no more visiting, no more rendang.
That's right.
But
so it'd be good to catch up with some rest.
Why are you happy about no more rendang? I'm so sad that there'll be no more rendang in the office.
Not after you've had rendang for like the whole month. But, you know, just how about spacing it out? It would be good.
Too much of a good thing, right?
That's right. Too much of a good thing.
But you know what? We have lots of good things in store for you today, particularly lots of fascinating discussions. So what do we have on the agenda?
Yep. Well, I don't know if you guys still consider yourself as youth. Well, we're about to find out as the government is working to define the age range for what constitute as youth. That would be nice.
Yes, a definition of youth. Okay. Well, I'll be talking about something... about like public acts of defiance, right? Do you ever feel so strongly about something that makes you mad? Or you think you have an important point to make? So do you ever take things into your own hands?
All right. And of course, if you want to weigh in on these conversations, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, we'll be taking a look at whether scrapping exams makes for healthier kids. So be sure to stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Sharitz and Xiaoning. Now, Singapore is revamping its school system. They're attempting to mitigate rising stress levels because the island state is seeing larger number of children seeking psychiatric help and even a couple of extreme cases of suicide. And Singapore, of course, has always prioritized education since the 1960s. They topped the PISA international rankings for maths, reading and science. But a study by the OECD, so that's the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, that despite their success in education, Singapore also reported higher levels of anxiety around schoolwork than other countries. And particularly, so they're going to be scrapping some of their primary exams now. So we've kind of moved towards this as well at the end of last year. And I think the debate is really still going about whether or not removing exams will still make for a good education system.
Yeah, I'm still divided, but I am sort of leaning towards exam. Now, my reason is that I find that these exams provide sort of like a checkpoint in your life, and it gives parents and, you know, some data for them to make some, you know, some really important decisions. It's just a matter of how parents react. Some will react to it negatively in the sense when they see their children fail in an exam, for an example, they will end up, pushing their kids harder instead of, hey, something's not right here. Are you interested, or is this what you're good at? And then reevaluate the plan. You know, their plans for their kids. That's how I see the benefit of having exams, you know, during school years.
Well, actually, I'm a product of Singapore education. I did my O levels there, so yes, I have to say I was semi tortured.
That explains a lot.
Yes, it was very tough for me. I mean, I won't lie. I came from quite a relaxed Malaysian education system and then went to Singapore and had a shock of my life, especially when it came to standards in maths and science, because it's much higher there. Mm. And you're right, the system there is really geared towards exams. And it's not just like your final year exam or your mid-year exams. There are exams every month. Guys, every month. So you're constantly studying.
Yeah.
I don't remember a day where I had a day off. You know, it's even worse than BFM.
But look at how you turn out.
A bit freaky, right?
I'm not going to go there. It's not freaky.
No, but the one thing I take away from studying in Singapore is the discipline it creates within you, okay?
Yeah.
And that's something I think is with me for life.
Mm.
The other thing also is that whatever's said and done, you do learn to work under pressure. Because you know you have deadlines.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, not everybody is meant for that. And that is where I think parents have to play the role in deciding what is best for their kids. Some kids thrive on it. They really do very well. And it pushes them forward. For some kids, it's not possible. It's just too much for them. So I guess it depends on the balance and also your child.
Yes, but specifically in regards to exams, right? I tend to fall on the other side of the spectrum. I disagree with exams. I don't think that they are a useful. I can see why they would be considered a useful metric, but I don't see why they are useful in regards to helping the actual child, because essentially what exams do, right, is that you memorize your syllabus and you go into an exam room and you regurgitate it. And I did well on exams because I have a very good memory, and that's really the only reason I would memorize things wholesale and just put it back out onto the page.
Respect.
There was very little.
You have photographic memory. Okay, now we know.
But see, because there is very little understanding involved in this. So when I went to university, that was my first introduction to assignment-based examinations, right? And I found that a lot more interesting because I actually had to think through my arguments a lot more than I had the time and the space to do that, rather than going into an exam hall for 2 hours and then the priority is basically just trying to say as much as you can in that time. So I also feel like exams can be used as a tool. Okay, here's me being slightly anarchic here, right? To just essentially churn out cookie cutter kids, because this is how we. How we standardize our education system. And I don't believe in a standardized education system. I think every child is unique and every child has a different way of learning. And we should try as much as we can to accommodate those different styles of learning.
Yeah, so I here comes the dilemma. I mean, in one hand, when you're able to push your kid, you're preparing them for the future. But at the same time, it's just that being on the... knowing exactly where your kids are at the moment, just being sensitive to the situation. I think that's a difficult one.
For me, the exams on some level gauge where you are and how you rank in a school or in a, like even within an age group. Like let's say, for example, SPM or O-levels, right? So you know where you are.
But why is that important though?
Because sometimes it helps you as a person decide where you should go forward. And it's a reality check. Because we all have, this sounds so cynical, right? We all have dreams and goals. We want to be architect, we want to be a lawyer, we want to be a doctor. But if we do these exams, these general exams like SPM, and we do badly, maybe we really need to relook at our own skills, our own capabilities. What are we really good at? And then make a decision again. Because there are, whatever said and done, some courses, let's say for medicine, where you do have to be brilliant. And if you don't have those brilliant results, maybe the course is not meant for you.
And those who excel within that system actually do quite well, not just in Malaysia, but they do well quite internationally as well. It's just those who did not make it through that system, now they are the ones that are sort of holding us back in that sense, you know.
But maybe they're not holding us back. Maybe we just haven't found the right method to fully unlock their potential. Mm. And I feel like that is really... unlocking their potential is something that cannot be done with a standardized education system. Anyway, this could be potentially a long debate. And let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Tell us what you think. We'll be right back with more stories for you. So be sure to stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Shariz Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. So what does it mean to be young? I think that is the perennial question, right? But now this is something that is coming up in Parliament, because the youth and Sports Minister, Syed Abdul Rahman, he's tabled an amendment in Parliament for the first reading this week. And it states that the definition of youths is those 30 and under, in line with international standards. Mm. And I think this has caused a bit of an uproar, because prior to this, I think our national definition of youths tended to be 35 and below. So you're immediately, it's immediately moving the goalpost slightly. Mm. But it's raised a question of what actually counts as a youth. So can someone who is 35 still be considered a youth?
Are you at the border, Sharitz?
I really am.
Or have you passed
the border?
In
this conversation between the two of you.
And I've left the border a long time ago, so it doesn't matter to me. But
I want it to be pushed a bit, on the far end.
For your own personal reasons.
Yeah. So that I don't feel guilty when I switch on my phone and play some
No, it's not that you don't want to. It's not that you don't want to feel guilty. It's that you don't want to feel old. Right, Sharitz?
Don't do this to me, Lynn. It's not very nice. But this emphasis, I think, is more on having... Again, we've been speaking a lot about, you know, voting age of being 18 mm-hmm. and so forth. So it's just a matter of giving more voices and, you know, trying to acknowledge that young generations today are much more mature than we think they are. And in some ways, we want to try and speed things up for them so that they have more voice, especially when the future is basically geared for them in some ways. But again... I don't know. It just seems like we're pushing. If we bring it down, mm-hmm. bring it lower, it just seems like we're really rushing them to grow up. That's my sense. Especially when we're now living much longer, when we have a prime minister at 93 years old.
Well, that's true. But the other thing I have about all this is that we're very obsessed about a number, aren't we? Mm. We keep debating whether it's 30, 35 or yeah. even 40.
21, 18.
21, 18. I mean, and there's no global definition, is there? Because gone online to see what different countries deem as youth. So even in Sweden, youth is 13 to 25, right? Mm-hmm. That's like way younger than what we want, mm. right? And even the United Nations defines it as 15 to 24.
Yeah.
And there were some studies in UK where they were asked, what is your definition of youth? And it came up to a number like 33. So to me, it's just a number. And I don't know, are we obsessed about this?
Yeah, I think it is mainly just, I think we're obsessed with it because it would help with policymaking, mm. right? To have that kind of definition of, okay, we have to affect people within this age range. What is important to people within this age range? And for me, I tend to fall on the side of, yeah, okay, you know, bring it down. Because there is a big difference between an 18-year-old and a 35-year-old. You have completely different priorities. You have very different life experiences. In some cases, you are actually of a different generational gap. An 18-year-old, for example, will have grown up as a digital native. So you are a lot more plugged into technology. And so exposures and priorities will be very different to those to someone in their mid-30s. So I tend to think that, you know, we should be actually shrinking this broad category of youth. Because you are not you are no longer considered a youth in terms of policymaking doesn't necessarily mean that you're no longer young, okay? you can have like 70, 80 years ahead of you if our prime minister is any indication. But in the sense of if we're trying to formulate policy, I think we should be looking at as homogenous a category as possible. And for me, 18 to 35 is too big of a gap.
Yeah, it's very wide. And I think because how much society has changed, how much technology has changed, how much life has changed in general, the 18-year-old has a vast different childhood than the guy.
A very different perspective, right?
Yes, from the guy in the 35. But between this 30 to 35, to me, is there a big difference? Can we just decide on a number and then just move forward?
I'll make it 40. Why not?
I think you will get to 41 day Sharits and then you will pass that border anyway.
Yeah, but why are we so eager to throw these people away from the club, from the youth club? I mean, in some ways, the whole integration thing makes it, you know, we want people to understand each other better. In some ways, integration is good. Once you exclude them from the club, the more disconnected they get. For example, all this, we have in the political party, we have all this youth club and so forth. Once they are out, I don't know, they've joined a whole completely different crowd. And eventually, yeah, again, that whole communication amongst them will be disconnected.
Actually, I come from a different point of view, which is that youths are not really taken seriously in this country. So why are we, you know, continuing to pigeonhole these people into the framework of youth? I'm sure a lot of people in the youth category wouldn't mind being considered full adults in their own rights with all the liberties and privileges accorded to them. I certainly wouldn't mind. Anyway, you know, let us know what you think. What is your age range for youth? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're coming up on the 6:30 news, and to take you there is the Bluebells with Young at Heart, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Sharitz and Shaoning. Now, at a recent event on artificial intelligence in China, a man burst onto stage and poured water over the head of the Baidu CEO, Robin Li. Now, most people in the audience thought this was part of the entire event.
Presentation.
Yeah. Until security came and carted the man off stage. And Li himself was quite taken aback by the whole business. So he was unmoving for a second until he asked. Eventually, he came back to his senses and asked the man, "What's your problem?" You know, essentially. And it's quite an interesting situation because these kinds of highly visible public acts of defiance are very rare in China. And we've it just kind of reminded me that we've had a couple of our own here in Malaysia as well. If you remember, there was the lady who dropped yellow balloons on Datin Sri Rosmah Mansor a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so I would try and relate yellow balloons perhaps with gold or something royalty. I mean, just to sort of signify. But I guess so, there's the point, isn't it? It has to have some form of
significance
symbol. I mean, for an example, we remember PETA, the animal activist. So they would normally throw red paint to symbolize blood. So as a result of
The fur, right, in the middle of the fashion show.
So then you understand what is the act, all about. But when you pour water, I don't know what signal you're trying to say, because you're basically saying, "What's your problem?" But there was actually no response to that. So we don't know what was his actual problem. Was it because AI was taking over his job, or I don't know what he's angry about.
I mean, water short circuits computers.
water short circuit computer or something.
Well, I think they're trying to dig, because as most press report, they don't really know. But the South China Morning Post says maybe it's related to the fact that Baidu has had a really bad quarter, and it's their first ever loss since going public in 2005. And because we're not in China, we don't really realize the significance of Baidu, which has like 70% of the market, because there's no Google there, right? Mm. So whether that made this guy very unhappy, maybe he's lost some money.
But what is the significance then of these kinds of public acts of defiance? What are you really achieving when you go out to do something like this? Because is it just for the publicity? Is it just to get your 15 seconds of fame? Because, for the most part, the people who do these, they get in trouble. Mm. So they must be doing this to achieve some kind of higher objective that transcends even the possibility that they may get arrested and charged, right?
Yeah, so 15 seconds of fame, that's a big price to pay, especially when, as you mentioned, I mean, it's basically some people could charge them as this being part of a crime. So it has to be worth it. And again, sometimes extreme situations need extreme measures. I mean, for an example, take this talk about climate change, how fast it's moving. It's nowhere. A lot of leaders do is they just sit in the meeting room and they just discuss and sign something. And then after that, nothing moves forward. But it takes, for an example, a 16-year-old to march and say something about it, and then the world takes notice. I'm not saying that that's the extreme thing that someone could do, but sometimes it just takes extreme measures to get the word out, really.
Yeah, in a way, maybe your frustrations are bottled up. Mm. You have a point and you have nowhere to go with it, and you want the public or to make a message. So then you think, what can I do to attract maximum attention? Mm. And this happens, right? I mean, like you say, PETA is one. Occasionally, you have the streakers across football fields. That's another.
Is that really a public act of defiance? Well, or is that really just for 15 seconds of fame?
Yeah, but sometimes they have like a banner of what their cause is, right? So, I don't know. Maybe it's just people's way of dealing with their frustrations. Otherwise, they feel they won't be heard.
Yeah, and so my initial thought when I see these kinds of public acts of defiance is, why don't you go through proper channels? But I guess this kind of frustration is born of not having the right channels to go through. Because perhaps in China, as you described, Shanning, Baidu is a giant. So how would one person or a couple of small people on the street be able to get their voices heard? They'd only be able to do so if they generated this kind of massive press coverage by doing something outrageous. Mm. We see that as well, I mean, on a slightly more extreme scale in undemocratic countries, where you see, like, for example, the Arab Spring in 2011. What was the catalyst of the Arab Spring? It was a fruit seller setting himself on fire. That was what really galvanized the people to take action, and it's because they become a symbol. There's no other way for them to release their frustration, I guess, as you said.
Yeah, a long history. We have some famous ones like Rosa Parks. I mean, she's famous for not sitting at the back of the bus in 1955 in Alabama during the days of racial segregation in US. And she just put her foot down and said, "That's it. I'm not going to sit at the back of the bus anymore." And she really galvanized people to rethink racial ways in US and go against it, you know, because there was it was great discrimination at that time.
Yeah, and bringing it to our current situation, the most recent example would be the car being scratched with a note, you know, on the
but
car.
Is that activism or just vandalism?
I would say so. A lot of people probably feel the same way. You know, a lot of people are frustrated with this whole issue of double parking. Hasn't been resolved for the long number of years, and at the same time, there are courteous drivers out there that sometimes they just treat this as if, you know, it's their right. They don't really care. Once they double park, they just, you know, they just move along. So I can see how it's bottled up, and now it's gone to the extreme.
Do you know what? But let's continue this conversation after this. We're coming up on a couple of messages. And also, don't forget to weigh in on the conversation if you've got something to say. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back with more discussions for you after this. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Sharitz Abdullah and Wong Shaoning. Now, earlier we were talking a little bit about public acts of defiance. And then the conversation also moved on to a particular story in which someone in Kuching scratched a car with the words "I parked like an idiot" because they had apparently blocked three other cars from leaving their parking spots. And I think this is I feel like there is a distinction to be made here, right? Because public acts of defiance, things like splashing water on the Baidu CEO or dropping yellow balloons on Datin Sri Rosmah Mansor, those have meaning. Okay, maybe we don't know what exactly the Baidu protester.
Yellow is bursae.
Yeah, yellow is bursae, right?
Yeah, but the Baidu guy, we have no clue.
Okay. We don't know
official reason
yet. So that's probably going to be coming out in a little bit. So we shall have to wait and see. But with these kinds of things, I tend to veer on the side of it's vandalism. Because, you know, there are, yes, you can say that it's born of frustration, because you definitely don't take a key to someone else's car without feeling a great sense of frustration and anger. But I don't necessarily agree with destroying private property or even public property in the name of making a point, but that maybe is just me.
Yeah, it's borderline. It's a crime as well, I think.
It is a crime.
It's not borderline.
To some, I think. So I know, I see where you're going from, and I do think that what happened in Kuching is a bit extreme in some way, because it costs, this basically cost the other person a lot of money, and It's a bit unfair, but at the same time, there is the elephant in the room is that the frustration exists because people continue to do this. And what's the reason? Sometimes it's just that people are, they just don't care. They don't care. Sometimes they're lazy to park where they want to go. It's probably about 200 or 300 meters away from their parking space.
But this is vigilantism, right? This is taking the law into your own hands. In the other instances that we described, particularly the dropping of the balloons, that didn't break any laws. You know, if anything, you know, and no one was harmed. You know, there was no monetary cost to public property or private property. But when you do something like this, you are actually costing someone else money. Mm. On the one hand, you could argue that it's only when it costs people money that they take notice. But on the other hand, you know, I don't feel that this is right. That I feel that if this is a symptom of a larger problem, you should be trying to take it through the proper channels.
Yeah, and when does it end then? Right? Because you start doing this, then what else would you end up doing when you're frustrated with someone?
Yeah, and there are those who actually face the same thing, but do it in perhaps in a more civic way in some ways.
Well, I have written notes and left it on people's cars. Yeah.
Yes, I have done that too.
But it has backfired. I mean, we have received some comments from our listeners saying that instead of them taking it seriously, instead their car got scratched instead. And I've experienced that myself personally, where I have spoken out against a few people for, again, breaking the rule, breaking the law. And then at the end of the day, it backfires and you get the brunt of it.
Yeah, I think it's just a wider lack of civic consciousness in society, really, and a disregard for the actual rule of law. In any case, thank you very much for your messages this morning. We haven't had a chance to get to them, because after this, we are coming up on the 7 o'clock news and then the business end of the Morning Run, so where we'll bring you lots of fascinating discussions from the international headlines. So be sure to stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.